We'll be in John chapter 11 this morning, moving away from 1 Corinthians 15 for just a week because I wanted to show something that was different, but also this was something that jumped out at me this week and this past week. And so as we come to John chapter 11, we'll be looking at a good portion of this chapter. Beginning at verse 1, now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and his sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore the sister sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and are you going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in a day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if one walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him. These things he said, and after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. Then his disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get well. However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him. Then Thomas, who is called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. And so when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Now Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. And when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, the teacher has come and is calling for you. And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. The Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, she is going to the tomb to weep there. Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. And the Lord said, see how he loved him. The Jews said, see how he loved him. And some of them said, well, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? And Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, "Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he's been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" Much of our lives are built on expectations. We expect certain things, things to accompany our days. Some of our expectations are not very realistic. Nothing hurts a prospective bride and groom than unrealistic expectations. We, as a nation, expected 2 years ago that the COVID situation would be finished. We expected the Centers for Disease Control and others of the federal agencies to have figured all this out and had squelched it by now. We have expectations on how our lives should go for our children, how their lives should be. We expect and hope that our lives would have very little in the way of troubles. We expect that people should know how we feel. And above all, we have expectations as to how we should be treated. We also have expectations of God. That somehow, as God, he is expected to do things a certain way, in a certain time frame. And as it's so obvious in the era, that we live, that God basically is to serve us when it should be the other way around. It's easy to trust God when our expectations are being met, that God is going to do things in the future just as we predict he will do things in the future, because that's what we want, don't we? We want a predictable God. But when he works in a different way, when circumstances get very dark and seemingly hopeless, our minds often begin to question. Just like our first parents did, we begin to question the goodness of God. Certainly he can directly do something right now. We think of what seems to be the quickest and easiest way. It is here that we must pause and consider. As God, he knows the best way, the way that brings glory to himself. And as this takes place, our faith is refined and it is tested. There may be some, when I speak about God and his glory, who get wary about this glory thing. Why does God want so much glory? Well, you see, God doesn't need anything. He's perfect. He needs nothing. But you, each and every one of you, need yourselves to see him as glorious. You suffer when you don't see him that way. God doesn't suffer. You do. It is all to your benefit to see the glory of God. You need to see him as glorious for your own good. That his way is perfect, even if it doesn't meet your personal preferences. Think about this. The glory of God has never produced injustice. Never has. It's always produced benefits. And as we look at our text, we see this played out. In verses 1 through 4, as we have read, especially when we come to verse 4, verse 4 tells us about what is going to happen or not happen. Whatever is going to happen will be for the glory of God. When Jesus heard that, he said, "The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it." And then all of a sudden, verses 5 and 6 almost seem to be a dichotomy. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Okay? That sounds really good. And it's true. But then verse 6, so that when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Wait. He loves these people. Well, why didn't he just run right to where Lazarus was? Instead, he stays 2 more days. He stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to work. That doesn't match expectations. Someone loves us, here's where we're sick. Man, they ought to be on their way pretty quick, don't you think? Well, if you love someone, you come right away. Time is of the essence. Yes, for you. But not for God. If you read the Sunday school preview I wrote for this week. God works in time, but he created time. He's above time, so time doesn't really have any kind of a bearing on him because he's Lord of time. And so he works his way and his will through time, but he is not ruled by time. We are ruled by time. Yeah, well, a good God wouldn't make people fret. But if he is a good God, there's no need to fret. Because a good God is worthy of our trust. So in verse 12, then his disciples said, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get well." However, Jesus spoke of his death, of the death of Lazarus. But they thought he was speaking about taking a rest and sleep. Then Jesus said plainly to them, "Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sake that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him." Now we run into the first of the earthly expectations. Then Thomas, who is called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go that we may die with him." Boy, there's a fellow you want to party with, huh? Thomas. "Let us also go that we can die with him as well." What was his expectation? He didn't expect anything great was going to happen. There was just going to be nothing but trouble. That's his earthly expectation. He had no idea of the glorious thing that was about to take place. And this is one of the disciples. Now here, the main expectation is voiced in verse 20 and 21. Now Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." If you had been here, my brother would not have died. It seems to be an honorable expectation. but it is one and the same time uninformed. She had no idea behind the reason for Jesus' delay. But notice again, there's a double expectation here, both earthly. If you'd have been here, you wouldn't have died. That's one. But two, now that he's dead, there's nothing you can do. If you'd have been here before he died, well, we might have had some hope. Now he's dead. He's dead. There's also a third problem. Well, there's a third issue that we can bring into this. Who is Jesus? Jesus is God. So our earthly expectation at that point was, well, he has to be here physically to be here. But as God, he's everywhere. He was there, but she didn't even know it, because she was looking to the physical and what she was expecting. But it wasn't just Lazarus' sister. I mean, if we look at verse 37, and some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Same thing. The situation continued to expose expectations that were full of human thinking, but completely blinded to what the Lord can do. Be clear, as you read this, Jesus is about to perform a miracle, and it'll be a completely unexpected miracle. It will not be to please Mary or Martha or any of the Jews that had assembled in attendance. The miracle will be a manifestation of the glory of God. But here's another point that often gets missed, that those things that are done to the glory of God also, at the same time, are engaged to do people good. Jesus has a short interview with Martha after she said what she did. Martha said to Jesus, verse 21, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But she said, but even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. But we don't know what she was meaning by that, because notice what Jesus said, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. So Jesus makes it clear that he is Lord of all life. But it is good that Martha knows these things. She understands to some degree these great things. And even knowing that great truth, that he will rise again at the resurrection at the last day, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live, and whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world. Jesus makes clear that he is the one who will conquer death. But notice, in verse 24, her reply to him, Martha said, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection the last day. Again, you have that understanding that her expectation is not of the present, but it is now of the future. He's dead. There's nothing that's going to happen with him. All hope for today is gone. We've got to put it all in tomorrow. And that's when Jesus makes clear that he is the one who will conquer death. He's the Lord of life. Well, then we come to Mary, Martha's sister. Hearing that Jesus has come, she rushes out to where he is. She falls at her feet. And in verse 32, and I don't mean to make light of this, but notice what happens. Mary came to where Jesus was. She saw him, fell down at his feet, and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Again, human expectation. After death, there's nothing that can be done. But I have to ask, what's the greater thing? Yes, Jesus could have come and rushed to the scene. And whatever ailment that Lazarus had, he could have said, gone. You're healed. And while I'm at it, bring all the others around here who are sick and I'll heal them as well. Wouldn't that be glorious? Yeah, it would. But we know something very well, don't we? Many sick people recover. Not every sickness brings death. And some people get sick and 24 hours later, they're better. But tell me someone who's ever recovered from death. Get sick, there are things that you are instructed to do with different sicknesses that can help speed healing. Lazarus could have easily been one of the thousands that Jesus had healed. But again, no one has ever recovered from death. This is exceedingly glorious. You see, God's glory shines brightest in the most difficult of difficulties. And when we come to verse 38, the time has come. Jesus stands before the tomb. He has them to roll the stone away. And you can't help but wonder that those who were rolling the stone away in front of the tomb were kind of saying, well, I wonder what this is going to bring. So the time has come. Jesus has come to Lazarus' tomb. Verse 39, he commands the stone to be taken away from the entrance. But there's one more time. One more time that human expectations get in the way. Human expectations that apparently limit or seem to dial back the Lord's power and ability. Here's Martha. He has told her basically that he is the Lord of life. And what does she say to him? There in verse 39, Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time, there's a stench. He's decomposing Jesus. What are you going to do with a decomposing corpse? What are you going to do with that stinking body? And Jesus' reply in verse 40 is in the form of a rebuke. Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? And then Jesus prayed in verse 41 and into 42 to show the connection that he had to the Father. And then he commanded, and he cried out with a loud voice for Lazarus to come forth. And he who had died came forth. Why? Because God is able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all that we could think or ask. Now, I'm not saying we've got this now, this new doctrine, we'll just run around all the graveyards just saying, well, Jesus raised this one, raised that one, raised that. That's not the purpose of what he did. But notice first, unbelief is crippling. Crippling to our hopes, but it's insulting to our Lord. Sometimes it's couched in a show of humanity. Oh, I believe that Jesus can do these things, but probably for someone better than me. I really don't deserve God to give special attention to my situation. I don't deserve special attention. Wait, you don't deserve to be saved? You don't deserve to be, yes, of course you don't deserve to be saved, but you'll take it, won't you? Do you know what had to happen for you to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ? The barriers that had to be overcome, the flesh, the thoughts, and all the will that had to be overcome for you to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. It was supernatural because it was done by the Spirit of God. Second, Lazarus was raised from the dead. But this is important. He did not have the resurrection from the dead. That's what we've been speaking of in 1 Corinthians for the past few weeks. That those who were raised from the dead by Jesus and when he returns, they'll never die. But the moment that Lazarus walked out of the tomb, he started dying all over again. In my own mind, if it were like what we have out here, we could see a gravestone, and we look on the gravestone and it says Lazarus. And what does it say underneath? Awaiting the resurrection. And then third and lastly, we can't escape the sovereignty of God. Jesus could have lived up to man's expectations, and we would have been poorer for it. God's ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are not our thoughts. They are infinitely better. And so therefore, we shouldn't put the expectation that we have upon him. We should reply, Lord, whatever thou dost ordain is right. Let's stand together for prayer.